Welcome to We Mentor Mondays with Nancy podcast. Get inspired. Break through to new dimensions with your entrepreneurial peers on the journey of self-leadership mastery and life success. Reinvent or evolve yourself as you redesign your business. Dual innovation. Take charge of who you next become. Feel more deeply to think, act, lead, and mentor more clearly and more effectively. Learn something new from our conversation today.
I have to say, Nancy, that this was really a free-flowing conversation and easy to do and just a lot of fun. And it made me think about things I hadn't thought of in years, and they kind of came back to me. And I just appreciated running the history tables on myself a little bit. And it's just neat to recircle some of that old stuff and then the new stuff about what I'm doing today.
Welcome to We Mentor Mondays. I'm Nancy, and welcome to 2021. Today's mentor guest is Tim Gilk of Wood & Con Corporation. Hi, Tim. Where in Minnesota are you?
Where am I? Well, I'm in my little office in good old Redwood Falls, Minnesota.
Excellent. Excellent. All right. Well, we've got like a big conversation to get into, but I wanted to share with the audience a little bit about your background. So Tim is the owner and president of Wood & Con Corporation at Redwood Falls, Minnesota. His company is a wholesale distributor of grain handling and grain storage products and sells services and delivers to dealers all over Minnesota and the Dakotas. Tim began working at Wood & Con in 1997 and entered ownership in 2006. Wood & Con serves these farm communities with a staff of 8 to 12 people, depending upon the season. Tim's personal life is complete but always expanding, he says. He's been happily married to Jennifer Gilk for 29 years. They have 3 adult children, of whom he is immensely proud, and has lived in the same house since 1998. In no particular order, his interests are golf, pheasant hunting, deer hunting, canoe, wilderness camping, cold beer, card games, travel, aviation, patio parties, reading nonfiction, singing, and trombone. So quite a plethora of interests. And his philanthropic side includes piloting for Angel Flight Central, which we'll talk about, donating blood, youth leader, and 3 tours of duty as a Sunday school teacher. One for each child, is that right?
That is correct. Wow, you make it sound way more interesting than I think it is.
Yeah, our lived life looks a little different than in our biography.
Right.
Yeah. Well, not every venture works out, and landing on your feet with resilience for the next opportunity is a self-leadership skill that's worth refining, especially after 2020 and moving into 2021. Our ego can engage mental constructs when we are in a transition that leads to self-sabotage, like puffing up to engage self-conscious superiority or getting engulfed or paralyzed in disastrous circumstances, which there's been a lot. And so we can get like caught up in these news feed of drama stories, or we can hide behind, you know, our self-importance. Oh, I can't do that. You know, I'm too good for that. But we can see these constructs kind of manifesting in 5 behaviors that can really debilitate and stunt self-leadership development, like perfectionism, fear of grief, sadness, fear, and self-judgment. So reflecting on our past facilitates progress towards self-leadership mastery. It's a chance to utilize our learned lessons as we reckon with our past decisions and acknowledge our growth so that we can move into transformation. So reflecting on our past is what's happening in our conversation with Tim Gilk today, and how he's facilitated and masters his own self-leadership, a chance to utilize those learned lessons through the reckoning of his past decisions, acknowledging his growth, and asserting appreciation and compassion in our self journey is really critical components to continue, you know, staying engaged and fully appreciative of our life. So our focus today is about how Tim recovers from potentially disastrous situations by avoiding these mental landmines to build resiliency for his next opportunity. So find out how he does it. And welcome to the program, Tim. Hey.
Oh, thank you.
I'm so ready for this conversation.
All right.
Yeah. We've been attempting to have it more than once. Oh, my goodness. But times of COVID, you know, just change everything.
Well, then life happens.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. So before 2020, let's go back even further than that, you know, kind of to your upbringing. If you picked five words for those who described, who would describe your parents, who are your caretakers that raised you, what would the words be for each?
Sure. For my mom, I chose empathetic, supportive, quiet, knowledgeable, and friendly.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
And your dad?
My dad, I think I have six words. I hope I didn't break any rules.
Well, yeah, the rules are worth bending a bit.
For my dad, I chose driven, ambitious, selfish, eager, generous, and lonely.
Wow. Those are very descriptive. You would have had to study both parents a bit to come up with those words.
Yeah, we've met. You bet.
And who else grew up in your household with you?
I have two sisters, one older and one younger. And there were two or three times my parents had invited children from the foster system to live with us. So, well, just for short spurts.
Oh, like a couple months or something?
Yeah, one was like, well, I was really young. I was probably kindergarten age. And I think that went on for not really long, maybe 6 months. And then there was another one when I was like high school age, leaving high school. I think that one went on for about 2 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
And what was that relationship like for you and your siblings?
You know, that was that one, I don't remember much about the earlier one.
You were pretty young.
I was really young. Yeah. She was just kind of around, and I never really understood why. The second time around, I was a little more aware of circumstances, and this was a young woman who was a close friend and close age to my younger sister, and they had similar interests, and they got along famously, and I enjoyed having her around too. She was a great addition to the home. She was very respectful of my parents. It was a positive situation.
Mm, nice. How was it for all of you then when you separated? Because the 2 years is a pretty long period of time.
You know, by the time that it ended, I was off to college. So it was emotionally a non-event for me. She was in and out of our lives on and off for the next few years, so peripherally. So really in that short term of a few years, really never lost contact. So it was really a smooth ending for me. I should ask my sister her perspective. I don't remember how that went.
Okay. Yeah. And you grew up in rural Minnesota?
Actually, no. I grew up in the Twin Cities in Eden Prairie.
Oh, that's right. Okay. Now I'm remembering. So Tim and I know each other through his wife, Jennifer, and my husband, Matthew, who are both real estate attorneys and have practiced together. And as a result, we've become friends over the years.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's been really a fun relationship. So that's why I was talking a little bit more familial. So you grew up in Eden Prairie. Okay.
Right, right.
Oh, that's right. Now I'm remembering because there's an airport that's right in Eden Prairie.
You are correct.
Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit more about you grew up in an entrepreneurial home.
I sure did. Yeah, my dad through my childhood, he's since left that business, but through my childhood, he was active in an airplane-based business And so I grew up basically on the airport, around airplanes, around pilots. And my mom also worked in the business as his bookkeeper.
Okay, and that worked really well. And then they sold the business.
Yeah, they stayed in it. I think I was in second grade or first grade when they opened it. My dad had previously worked for other airport manager owners. And somewhere around first or second grade, he decided to go out on his own with some partners, and they stayed in it all through my childhood. I think the year they sold it was the year I graduated from high school.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
And so what did your parents do next?
They transitioned into a series of residential developments. Eden Prairie was a little bit rural at the time, and they were able to acquire some tracts of land and sell them into subdivided lots. They were in and out of that on and off for the next, I'd say, 20 to 30 years. And then also in there somewhere, my dad had an attempt at owning a car dealership.
And how did that work out for him?
That was a nonprofit organization. That wasn't all that good. The real estate business was pretty good, though.
Yeah, I can imagine. So what were some of the biggest challenges that you experienced in growing up in an entrepreneurial home?
Well, life seemed to revolve around the business. I mean, parents work late hours when they're in business for themselves. They work a lot of weekends. It was sometimes really frantic and sometimes really exciting. There's just always adventures when your parents are in business for themselves.
Right.
We would have, because we had access to airplanes, made some of the vacations really fun. We could go unique places. And there was a decent amount of money around. So I think I had a slight advantage in that department over some of my friends and classmates.
Yeah.
Sometimes it was lonely with parents working a lot of hours. The business had to come first a lot of days. And so that sometimes it was a little lonely to be a child of entrepreneurs.
Yeah. So you used that term with your expressing, you know, a descriptive term of your dad as well. So did you connect with his loneliness, or how do you identify with that?
Well, I just in that situation, I mostly just observed it. His best friends were his business partners. He didn't seem to have a lot of success in making friends outside the business. So in that regard, I think he was just a little lonely.
Yeah. And what was the loneliness like for you as a child?
Well, I didn't know any different. And looking back, it really wasn't that bad. I just remember that the business would come first a lot of days, and I didn't understand why. Mm. And now that I'm a business owner, I kind of understand why.
Yeah. Do you explain it to your kids then?
Well, probably not well enough, but I sure try. And I've had the benefit of better economy here in our current situation. Back when my parents were in business and when I was a kid, the whole early 80s and high interest rates and all that, it was a stressful time to be a business owner. And there was a lot of stuff they dealt with. I realize it now that was pretty hard.
Yeah. And how did they normally handle those types of setbacks?
My dad would explain it, you know, a young child, he would explain it as well as he could to me, explain interest rates, explain floor planning, explain inventory. And he would compensate by working more. He would go back to the office and figure out the next move. He would compensate by putting more hours in.
Okay. And did that ease the transition then into kind of finding the next or solving the problem?
Oh yeah. He was good at finding solutions, finding ways to sell product. Yeah, he was pretty good at marketing. So yeah, the extra time paid off for him.
Mm, excellent. Okay. And what were some of the interests that you developed then in this entrepreneurial environment?
I noticed all through my childhood, I observed that my parents were basically managers of their own business. They were basically the bosses, and By observation, I learned that that's kind of neat and kind of something I wanted to get into.
Mm-hmm.
And then my dad being in an aviation business, I also developed an interest in flying. So that was a separate schooling and skill set that I was able to acquire. So that was kind of a dual track for me, observing his world as a pilot and his world as a manager of people.
Hmm. Yeah, that's kind of cool. Yeah. So your journey take us a little bit into how your life evolved out of college or through college and then beyond.
Sure. My college years were spent at the University of Minnesota Morris, which is a really small town, very far from the Twin Cities. And I was the first in my family. When I talk about grandparents and cousins and uncles and aunts, I think I was the first to have a college degree. So that was a big deal to me.
Yeah.
So I went to 4-year liberal arts college, University of Minnesota Morris, and that's where I met my wife. We both played in the band. So that's where we met. I got majors in Spanish and in business. And yeah, I really enjoyed college. I enjoyed the transition to a small town. I don't know why. I just did.
Yeah. And that seemed to be so affectionately received that you end up, moving to a small town.
Yeah, it's funny how it turns out. Now I'm living in a town of almost the same size, different part of the state, but really similar as far as town composition, population, economy, all that stuff.
So what is the population of Redwood Falls?
We're a little over 5,000.
Okay. Nice. Well, and you have like a Von Trapp type family dynamic because you all play instruments and you all have performed together.
Yeah, that's kind of fun. You know, Jennifer and I both have a strong background in music. We were in the band and stuff all through college. And kind of went inactive on that. And then our children came along and they started getting into band and choir. And we were big cheerleaders of that. And once in a while, we would dabble in music things at church and so forth. In fact, Jennifer was a director of the handbell choir at church for a while. So that was always kind of in the background. And then our kids got pretty good at what they're doing. And each of them had a senior recital. And you were at the one most recent. Abby had a recital. And she and I sang a duet. And we all played
Anything
our instruments.
Anything you can do, I can do better.
That's right. From so Andy, cute. Get Your Gun. Yeah, yeah. That was kind of a highlight of the year for me. That was a big deal. And then all of us, all the kids and a couple other people got together and had a little Dixieland band as part of Abby's recital. And that was it's just really fun. I'm to the point where it's really not stressful. It takes some preparation. By gosh, it sure takes preparation.
Changed the date also because to handle COVID, and then you decided, instead of canceling it, that you would move the date, and then had people, you required masks and you had the theater set up for for people to seat, 6 feet apart. And you were, I just really appreciated that. It made us, I think that's the only concert we went to this year. And we just really were glad that we did it because it was so fantastic. And
my wife and my daughter have to get a lot of the credit for all of that. Now, the stressful part, and it's really hard on a high school senior, is we basically had to plan things 2 or 3 separate times because things just kept changing as far as the pandemic, as far as what facilities we could have, as far as who we could invite. So that was kind of complicated. And I was there in the background, but I got to give my wife and daughter credit for that. As far as the event itself, Abby and I worked together on setting up the, roping off aisles in the auditorium and making signage and getting some of her friends around as helpers to have sign-in sheets and issue masks and all that. So it just added to the adventure. And the actual recital, when we finally got to do it, was it was a relief and a joy all at once that we finally pulled it off. But I should back up to the preparation thing. The music we played was not that complicated, but I don't practice my trombone anymore. And so for a thing like this, which is a a one day, one off thing. There's 4 months or 3 or 4 months of rehearsing for me so I can get my chops back and actually play the darn thing. So there was some time invested, not just in preparing for, people and regulations, but actually preparing an instrument was actually part of the mix.
Oh, sure. Wow. All of your kids play like more than one instrument.
Yeah. Everybody plays the piano to some point in our house. I'm the least talented on the piano, but everybody plays piano and is quite accomplished. Yeah, Carter, our oldest, he can play any instrument. He's really good at bassoon and bass guitar and piano. And Abby plays all the saxophones, so does Jennifer. And Spencer's a percussionist, so he plays all the percussion instruments plus piano. So yeah, we could have our own band if we had enough horns.
Yeah, and one of the songs, Carter was playing the tuba. Yeah.
Yeah, I forgot he plays tuba too, yeah. Shame on me.
Yeah, well, it seems like a lot to keep track of. That was part of just a huge, I mean, it was a big transition for this year. And if we stayed kind of talking about that, Abby is your youngest, and so she went off to college this year, and you became empty nesters.
Yeah, sure did.
And what was that like?
Well, it got really quiet.
And, I can relate.
And, for the last 2 years of high school, she was around, and she is somewhat quiet. It's not like there was raging parties in the house. She's a quiet side for social life. But when she moved off to college, it got really quiet, and that was you try to prepare for that, but you're not ready. You say you're ready, but you're not ready. It just gets weird because it gets so quiet.
Yeah, I know. Matthew and I, like, the first 2 weeks were so difficult. I mean, we were just like crying and...
What do we do?
Right, yeah. Oh my gosh, no extra food to prepare.
Right, the meal planning is a cinch. Everybody knows when we're going to eat because it's just the two of us, or one of us, if one of us is working.
Oh, all right. So take us into kind of your entrepreneurial journey. Like, how did that kind of start setting root?
Oh, sure. Well, as a kid, I was always kind of the hired hand. I was always the assistant at the background, one of my dad's various businesses. And by the time I got done with college, he was established in this used car dealership. And I worked with him for a couple of years in his business. And then we moved here to Redwood Falls. Jennifer and I moved to Redwood Falls so she could start her law practice. And so I opened a branch office of the car dealership here in Redwood Falls on my own. So all along I'd been working for him as an assistant, helper, partner, I don't know what the proper term is. And then we move away and we had the crazy idea of opening our own used car dealership here in this little town.
Ah, and how did that go?
Well, it was in all ways a disaster. It was just for an entrepreneur, youth is not necessarily a strength. You can't necessarily see straight. I don't think the proper deductive reasoning is fully established in your brain. You're prone to make decisions without good reasoning, without good analysis. And in my case, I was a perfectly alone, one-man band, no support staff, really no guidance. It was a recipe for disaster, and I cashed in completely.
Wow, and that must have been particularly difficult because it's your first venture.
Yeah, I think the word I'm grasping for is humbling. Yeah, it was what should have been a home run turned out to be a nonprofit organization. It was just I was in over my head. Yes.
Mm. So, what was the final decision making part? Like the final straw that you just said, okay, this is it. I can't do it.
Yeah, one day I was just doing some arithmetic because it seemed I was short of money. And I was short of money. I was short of tens of thousands of dollars, and it's because my overhead was eating into my assets. And if I kept doing what I was doing, pretty soon I would just have nothing. So I had a humbling moment. I think it was the spring of or winter of 97. And it was just a tumultuous time. I figured out that this thing is insolvent. And at that time, Jennifer was pregnant with our first child. And I thought, oh boy, this isn't going to be good. And it was a really humbling year for me.
Yeah. Frightening.
Yeah.
Yeah. So did you sell it off or you couldn't sell it? So did you just close it?
Yeah. There was nothing to sell. I basically, I had a few months on the calendar that would be good weather, good selling conditions. So I scrambled and just started gearing down for selling the inventory I have and starting to job hunt a little bit. And
were you renting a lot?
Yeah, renting a facility, which okay. I was able to undo that. It was a matter of a few months where I just basically ran the business to a halt, selling assets, basically running without any paycheck. And it was okay. After I humbled myself and explained the situation to my wife and my parents, who were very supportive.
That's good.
We came up with a short-term game plan. We got through it, sold everything off, and there was nothing to sell. Nobody wanted to buy this thing.
Yeah. Okay. If you couldn't make it work, nobody probably else could.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So what did you do next?
I was going to, my dad was involved in a real estate development in the edge of the Twin Cities, and I was going to go work for him. And that was the plan. And I actually did for a week or two, kind of as a hired gun, hired hand. And somewhere around the time, it was late summer of that year, I put I announced my going out of business sale, and a friend and neighbor came to see me. His name is Dave Wood. And he said, come see me. I got a job you might be interested in. Well, Dave Wood was the owner at that time of the business that I'm now in, Wood & Kahn. So I went to see him, and we interviewed, and he gave me a tour of his place, and I decided to jump ship from the family business train and go work for Dave Wood.
Wow, and that turned out to be a brilliant decision.
Yeah, hindsight is 20/20, but that one was pretty good.
Okay. And I bet that prepared you. Sometimes we have this kind of rosy view of entrepreneurship, you know, in somehow things end up, you know, working well without knowing all the intricacies of it if you grow up in an entrepreneurial home. And so this must have made it really realistic.
Yeah. You know, I come out of being in my own business and very humbled and realizing I don't know much. And then I work for Mr. Wood for a few years, and he allowed me to just be good at a few things, like learning the products, selling to people, learning our customers, learning who they are, their personalities, which were things I was already good at, but he let me get better at those. And as I do that, I realize there's other things to being in business that I'm not all that good at. Like, I'm not all that good at reading financial documents. I'm not really all that good at billing and accounts payable. I'm not all that good at human resources. I'm not all that good at scheduling. So there are other people working here who do that stuff, and they're pretty good at it. And maybe I can learn something from them as I'm just a lowly employee, a sales guy working for the boss.
Yeah. And at that time, how many other employees were there?
Well, at the time I've been here, we've always been a very small company. Those early years, it was probably 10 or 12 people working here.
And tell us a little bit about the products and the services that you provide for these farmers.
Sure. Our business is a little unique in that not only are we small, but we are strictly wholesale. We sell products like grain bins for grain storage, and then all the conveyors and elevators and augers that move the grain from point A to point B. So everything we do here is around the storage and handling of grains, corn and soybeans primarily.
Okay.
And then what we do is we buy these things from factories in Iowa and Kansas and other places, and we sell these products to dealerships that go out and sell to farmers and install them on farms and construct them on site. And we have these dealers all over the eastern part of the Dakotas and all over Minnesota also.
That's very great. Yeah, as well as very needed, right? I mean, how else do...
Yeah, we've had... the farm economy has been fairly strong in the time I've been here, with some ups and downs. We've had the occasional recession. We just went through a period of really low grain prices the last, I want to say, 5 years. But we sell a product that is necessary for the farmer to be in business, the storage of grain. So we have seem to have a constant demand for our products.
Yeah. Which is part of your longevity.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. We sell a product that people need.
Yeah. So you continued working there, and over the years then, how did things kind of evolve into you taking a stronger leadership role?
After a couple of years of working here, Mr. Wood made it known that he was nearing the end of his working career and was interested in selling the business. And at first we didn't show much interest. And when I say we, I mean my wife and me. But as time went on, we circled back and resumed some conversation with Mr. Wood about how this would work and what it would cost and the time frame and all that. And so there was a lot of negotiation behind the scenes, and my wife was integral in that because she's being an attorney and an expert negotiator. She was, man, she just kind of drove the ship for that thing. But we came to an agreement after a lot of evening meetings and weekend meetings and all kinds of phone calls and crazy ideas. We came to a meeting where we went into ownership, and for a 5-year period, we started out as basically 50-50 partners, me and Mr. Wood. And at the end of the 5 years, I had a final payment to make to buy them out in full. So that's what we did.
Mm. And when did that happen? So 2006?
Yeah, the dates kind of escaped me. But yeah, the 2006, January 2006, was the date we started this process. And I think it was January 1 of 11, 2011, when we finalized the last payment and bought them out. And all along there, this was the fun part, I had my boss and mentor and partner around to kind of show me the ropes of the ownership side of this.
Yeah. And he must have then emotionally kind of come to terms with, because he made the announcement, he must have been at a place, because the hardest thing for entrepreneurs is to relinquish ownership.
That is very true. He was, but he was clear. He thought he was old enough to stop doing this. And so he had that in his head, and he was right. He was at a good age to start winding this thing down. I think he was in the late 60s at the time. But he was very loyal always to his employees, and he wanted this thing handed off to someone who would retain that loyalty to the employees. So he was pretty selective on who he shopped this business to. And so the loyalty to employees was a big thing I learned from Dave Wood.
Mm, a core value of his. Respect those who helped you, you know, provide you with a living.
He'd been at this since sometime in the 60s, and through a lot of boom time years and then through the 80s of the farm depression. And he'd been on both sides of it. And a lot of the employees stuck through all of that. So he felt the need to return that loyalty.
Excellent. And what was it like for the first couple of years then? Well, because he was involved then for a while, I mean, when did you know that it was time, like, okay, I got this?
You know, it just kind of happened by itself. As time went on, when we first started out, every time there was a difficult decision, even if Mr. Wood wasn't, he would disappear for the winter, go south. But even if he wasn't here, we would find him. I would find him and get his input and have him make the difficult decisions. But as time went on, it just kind of evolved. And by the time that 5 years had wound down, I was basically doing everything. And somehow it happened, and he must have trained me along the way and started to trust me along the way, and it just evolved into one day I was doing everything.
Oh, that sounds just remarkably smooth.
Yeah, it really was. The whole 5 year span, and I'm speaking specifically of my relationship with Dave Wood, my partner, was incredibly smooth.
Hmm.
We had very few areas upon which we disagreed. He was reasonable when we would discuss it and come to a decision. Reasonable to a point. Reasonable to a fault. He was always super congenial and willing to listen, and just a gem. If you had to pick a partner to be in business with, and you had all the choices in the world, he'd be at the top of the list.
Yeah, and he mentored you along the way and just created kind of this path to ownership that is very unique. And the fact that you were in a small town, I mean, the opportunities for work in a small town, are limited. And so it's really a wonderful experience that you've had.
Yeah, it really is. Yeah, you're right about the limited job market. And coupled with that was that he was a motivated seller. He wanted to retire. My wife and I were motivated investors. We wanted to put our money somewhere where I would have a reasonable job for the foreseeable future. So everything kind of came together.
Hmm, that's nice. I think we're going to finish out this conversation. And then I would like to talk with you more about your experiences and kind of what were the kind of foundational pieces that you've been talking about, how you're really, talented with customer service and how you protected your staff this last year, especially. And then what it's like to be married to Jennifer, who's also another entrepreneur. And two entrepreneurs in the same family don't always work out. And so I think that's what's really special about your story and your life together in how you complement each other. So are there things that you want to make sure that business owners listening? I think one of them, if you're going to be in business in a partnership, it's as important as someone who you marry or are in a long-term relationship with. The partnership is kind of everything.
Sure. Yeah, I found that it worked out so good with Mr. Wood because we trusted each other implicitly, and that was reflected throughout the company. All the employees really put a lot of trust in him. He trusted his staff. It was a good example of a two-way street. Everybody was on the same page. So I find that a big factor in how I run the place. Everybody needs to understand each other and trust each other and work for the same goal, be on the same page.
Yeah. Well, and that takes a lot of effort and a lot of clarity on your point too of, clarifying what is it that I want, what are we working toward?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And what is it about the relationships and how we work together that will really, really lead us to down the path or to reach our goals each year, each month, each week, each day? Yeah.
Sure. Sure.
Well, that's a great way to start this year, is to really look at yourself and your ability to develop trusting relationships with those who are close to you is where we first experience how to build trust.
Yeah, I agree.
I just love the way your life has really unfolded in such an unpredictable world. It's nice to have some grounding in places in which you can work that are pretty stable over the long term.
Yeah, it's been good. I've managed to retain some good employees when I bought the business, and hire since then some good employees. And it's such a blessing to have good people working, trustworthy people who can read me, who I can read them, who share the same values. It's really a blessing, and it makes it fun.
Yeah, cool. I like that you add the fun element. Excellent. All right. Well, thank you so much. This has been a very precious conversation, a wonderful way to kind of launch us further into the month of January and hear some conversations that are enriching, that are stabilizing, that help us to kind of embrace deeper qualities in ourselves that help us to become more resilient and responsive to what we're experiencing. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right. And thanks everybody for listening. I really appreciate you. And thank you, mon frère de notre mère. Yes, I did it. Okay. My brother from another mother, Mike Abea. Thank you for your help this year and all these years. And we'll see you all when you tune in next week to We Mentor Mondays with Nancy. Bye. Do you want to build upon your leadership skills and become more effective as a business owner? Do you want to reinvent yourself or evolve as you redesign your business? This is a dual innovation process. Are you ready to take charge of who you next become? If the answer is yes, I've been developing and implementing mentoring programs to thousands of emerging to experienced entrepreneurial leaders and business owners and their teams since 1992. I totally love it and feel I'm on this planet to evolve the leadership in the world from the inside out. Of course, this means seeing myself as a work in progress, which is beneficial to you because I'm not stagnant and I'm motivated to create and bring you incredible programming all the time. So here's a few ways that you can get involved in our We Mentor Self-Leadership community. You can subscribe for free through wementor.com to the podcast. You can also find it on Apple Podcasts, which used to be iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, Blueberry Directory, iHeartRadio, or TuneIn Radio, which is where you can shout out your request on smart home device through Alexa, Cortana, Amazon Echo, and Google Home. You can also become a sponsor of this program and support what's happening here in all these meaningful conversations. Or you can get one-on-one mentoring and go at your own pace as you evolve into the leader that you've always wanted to become. You can join a We Mentor Mini Lab, which we offer several times during the year. We're focused on some element of self-leadership and your progress toward becoming more effective. And the last and final way in which you can get involved in We Mentor's self-leadership community is by joining a one-year entrepreneurial leadership and mentoring lab where we dig into the details and help you with the operational along with your leadership skills so you can evolve with your entity and really, really progress in building the life that you've always wanted to build. So please check out wementor.com. You can email me, nancy@wementor.com, or call me, 1-612-804-8920. All right, keep listening, and we'll see you next week.